so don't forget it. It's just a silly phase I'm going through. And just because I call you up, don't get me wrong, don't think you got it made. I'm not in love, no, no.
It's because
I like to see you, but then
say effort is an energy.
Realized I forgot to do my introduction, so here we go. We had some technical difficulties in the beginning, which is why I played 10cc off of the songs we have downloaded here at WMFO, but the rest of the show is going to be dedicated to the 80s underground, specifically like the ambient and new age movements happening at the time, and I'm going to read, or try to finish, Jorge Luis Borges' The Library of Babel over a lovely soundtrack of 80s ambient and new age. And I do think that when people look back on the 80s in music, they think of hair metal and Reagan and Thatcher and all of that kind of stuff. But there was sort of, I really do think that a sort of 80s underground movement is overlooked because specifically the availability of the cassette made it a lot easier to record, and so you had a lot more people making absolutely beautiful, dreamlike, independent music in their bedrooms, and I think that's a beautiful thing. Anyway, the song I interrupted is called The Best Weapon. It's by English group named Flaming Tunes.
Exhaustible source. That if it wasn't for hope, the heart would break. Beware of the friend who becomes a master. The best weapon is the weapon of learning.
In the days of the upward curve, thank you.
dreams that I've recalled. When you see down and see that, and see that, and every day that.
Yeah. Visit the other side of a dream. Your ticket is a little packet of white powder called heroin. But every packet of heroin is different. You don't know what's getting into you. Some doses are so strong they kill. Heroin is so vicious that the criminals who make the big money in heroin don't use it. They know a lot of reasons why heroin is very, very dumb. Maybe that's why they call it dope.
Thank you. spring, the summer rain softly turn to sing again. Welcome the bud, the summer blooming flower. Welcome the child whose hand I hold.
Sorry about that. Since we began, we had The Best Weapon by Flaming Tunes out of London. Then we had Tears of Clown by a Venetian soundmaster, Gigi Massin. Don't know Italian pronunciation. Then we had Soon to Be Innocent Fun / Let's See off of Arthur Russell's 1986 album World of Echo. Russell is probably the using legend, of course, no one from the 80s underground was a household name, but he is by far the biggest legend of the 80s underground. Then we had really nice Private Press New Age album, New Age song, Ever New, by Beverly Glenn Copeland, off of Keyboard Fantasies. Very fitting album name. And next up, I'm going to read you some Borges, Library of Babel. I actually got about halfway into it like 2 months ago, but kind of abandoned it, so we're starting from the beginning again. But anyway, yeah, gonna be reading it to you over some more Private Press New Age. We're gonna start off with a song called Rococo Rondo by a group called the Ghostwriters. Here we go. The universe, which others call the library, is composed of an indefinite, perhaps an infinite, number of hexagonal galleries, with enormous ventilation shafts in the middle encircled by very low railings. From any hexagon, the upper or lower stories are visible interminably. The distribution of the galleries is invariable. 20 shelves, 5 long shelves per side, cover all sides except 2. Their height, which is that of each floor, scarcely exceeds that of an average librarian. One of the free sides gives upon a narrow entranceway, which leads to another gallery, identical to the first and to all the others. To the left and to the right of an entranceway are 2 miniature rooms. One allows standing room for sleeping, the other the satisfaction of fecal necessities. Through this section passes the spiral staircase, which plunges down into the abyss and rises up into the heights. In the entranceway hangs a mirror, which faithfully duplicates appearances. People are in the habit of inferring from this mirror that the library is not infinite, if it really were, by this illusory duplication. I prefer to dream that the polished surface is fain and promise infinity. Light comes from some spherical fruits called by the name of lamps. There are 2 running transversely in each hexagon. The light they emit is insufficient, incessant. Like all men of the library, I have traveled in my youth. I have journeyed in search of a book, perhaps of the catalog of catalogs. Now that my eyes can scarcely decipher what I write, I'm preparing to die a few leagues from the hexagon in which I was born. Once dead, there will not lack pious hands to hurl me over the banister. My sepulchre shall be unfathomable air. My body will sink lengthily and will corrupt and dissolve in the wind engendered by the fall, which is infinite. I affirm that the library is interminable. The idealists argue that the hexagonal halls are a necessary form of absolute space, or at least of our intuition of space. They contend that a triangular or pentagonal hall is inconceivable. The mystics claim that to them ecstasy reveals a round chamber containing a great book with a continuous back circling the walls of the room, but their testimony is suspect, their words obscure. That cyclical book is God. Let it suffice me, for the time being, to repeat the classic dictum. The library is a sphere whose consummate center is any hexagon, and whose circumference is inaccessible. 5 shelves correspond to each one of the walls of each hexagon. Each shelf contains 32 books of a uniform format. Each book is made up of 410 pages, each page of 40 lines, each line of some 80 black letters. There are also letters on the spine of each book, These letters do not indicate or prefigure what the pages will say. I know that such a lack of relevance at one time seemed mysterious. Before summarizing the solution, I want to recall certain axioms. The first, the library exists ab eternum. No reasonable mind can doubt this truth, whose immediate corollary is the future eternity of the world. Man, the imperfect librarian, may be the work of chance or of malevolent demiurges. The universe, with its elegant endowment of shelves, of enigmatic volumes, of indefatigable ladders, up for the voyager, and privies for the seated librarian, can only be the work of God. In order to perceive the distance which exists between the divine and the human, it is enough to compare the rude, tremulous symbols with which my fallible hand scribbles on the end pages of a book with the organic letters inside. Exact, delicate, intensely black, inimitably symmetric. The second, the number of orthographic symbols is 25. This bit of evidence permitted the formulation, 300 years ago, of a general theory of the library and the satisfactory resolution of a problem which no conjecture had yet made clear. The formless and chaotic nature of almost all books. One of these books, which my father saw in a hexagon of the circuit number 1594, was composed of the letters MCV perversely repeated from the first line to the last. Another, very much consulted in the zone, is a near labyrinth of letters, but on the next to last page, one may read, O Time, Your Pyramids. As is well known, for one reasonable line or one straightforward note, there are leagues of insensate cacophony, of verbal farragos and incoherencies. I know of a wild region where librarians repudiate the vain, superstitious custom of seeking any sense in books, compared to looking for meaning in dreams or in the chaotic lines of one's hands. They admit that any sense in book. They admit that the inventors of writing imitated the 25 natural symbols, but they maintain that this application is accidental and that books in themselves mean nothing. This opinion, we shall see, is not altogether false. For a long time it was believed that the impenetrable books belonged to past or remote languages. It is true that the most ancient men, the first librarians, made use of a language quite different from the one we speak today. It is true that some miles to the right, the language is dialectical and that 90 stories up it is incomprehensible. All this, I repeat, is true. The 410 pages of unvarying MCVs do not correspond to any language, however dialectical or rudimentary it may be. Some librarians insinuated that each letter can influence the next, that the value of MCV on the third line of page 71 was not the same as that of the same series in another position on another page, but this vague thesis did not prosper. Still, other men thought in terms of cryptographs. This conjecture has come to be universally accepted, though not in the sense in which it was formulated by its inventors. 500 years ago, the chief of an upper hexagon came upon a book as confusing as all the rest, but which contained nearly two pages of homogeneous lines. He showed his find to an ambulant decipher. He told him the lines were written in Portuguese. Others told him they were in Yiddish. In less than a century, the nature of the language was finally established. It was a Somali-Lithuanian dialect of Guarani, with classical Arabic inflections. The contents were also deciphered. Notions of combinational analysis, illustrated by examples of variations with unlimited repetition. These examples made it possible for a librarian of genius to discover the fundamental law of the library. This thinker observed that all the books, however diverse, are made up of uniform elements. The comma, the space, the 22 letters of the alphabet. He also adduced a circumstance confirmed by all travelers. There are not, in the whole vast library, two identical books. From all these incontrovertible premises, he deduced that the library is total, and that its shelves contain all the possible combinations of the 20-odd orthographic symbols. That is, everything which can be expressed in all languages. Everything is there. The minute history of the future, the autobiographies of the archangels, the faithful catalog of the library, thousands and thousands of false catalogs, a demonstration of the fallacy of these catalogs, a demonstration of the fallacy of the true catalog, the Gnostic Gospel of Basilides, the commentary on this gospel, the commentary on the commentary of this gospel, the veridical account of your death, a version of each book in all languages, the interpolations of every book in all books. When it was proclaimed that the library comprised all books, the first impression was one of extravagant joy. All men felt themselves lords of a secret, intact treasure. There was no personal or universal problem whose eloquent solution did not exist in some hexagon. The universe was justified. The universe suddenly expanded to the limitless dimensions of hope. At that time, there was much talk of the Vindications, books of apology and prophecy, which vindicated for all time the actions of every man in the world and established a store of prodigious arcana for the future. Thousands of covetous persons abandoned their dear natal hexagons and crawled up the stairs, urged on by the vain aim of finding their vindication. These pilgrims disputed in the narrow corridors, hurled dark maledictions, strangled each other on the divine stairways, flung the deceitful books to the bottom of the tunnels, and died as they were thrown in space by men from remote regions. Some went mad. The Vindications do exist. I have myself seen two of these books, which were concerned with future people, people who were perhaps not imaginary. But the searchers did not remember that the calculable possibility of a man finding his own book, or some perfidious variation of his own book, is close to zero. The clarification of the basic mysteries of humanity, the origin of the library and of time, was also expected. It is credible that those grave mysteries can be explained in words. If the language of the philosophers does not suffice, the multiform library will have produced the unexpected language required, and the necessary vocabularies and grammars for this language. It is now 4 centuries since men have been wearying the hexagons. There are official searchers, inquisitors. I have observed them carrying out their functions. They are always exhausted. They speak of a staircase without steps where they were almost killed. They speak of galleries and stairs with the local librarian. From time to time, they will pick up the nearest book and leaf through its pages in search of infamous words. Obviously, no one expects to discover anything. The uncommon hope was followed, naturally enough, by deep depression. The certainty that some shelf in some hexagon contained precious books and that these books were inaccessible seemed almost intolerable. A blasphemous sect succeeded that all searches be given up, and men everywhere shuffle letters and symbols until they succeeded in composing by means of an improbable stroke of luck the canonical books. The authorities found themselves obliged to issue severe orders. The sect disappeared, but in my childhood I still saw old men who would hide out in the privies for long periods of time, and with metal discs and a forbidden dice box, feebly mimic the divine disorder. Other men, inversely, thought that the primary task was to eliminate useless works. They would invade the hexagons, exhibiting credentials which were not always false, skim through a volume with annoyance, and then condemn entire bookshelves to destruction. Their ascetic, hygienic fury is responsible for the senseless loss of millions of books. Their name is execrated. But those who mourn the treasures destroyed by this frenzy overlook two notorious facts. 1. The library is so enormous that any reduction taken by humans is infinitesimal. 2. Each book is unique, irreplaceable, but insomuch as the library is total, there are always several hundreds of thousands of imperfect facsimiles of works which differ only by one letter or one comma. Contrary to public opinion, I dare suppose that the consequence of the depredations committed by the purifiers have been exaggerated by the horror which these fanatics provoked. They were spurred by the delirium of storming the books in the Crimson Hexagon, books of a smaller than ordinary format, illustrated, magical. We know, too, of another superstition of that time. The man of the book. In some shelf of some hexagon, men reasoned, there must exist a book which is the cipher and perfect compendium of all the rest. Some librarian has perused it, and it is analogous to a god. Vestiges of the worship of that remote functionary still persist in the language of this zone. Many pilgrimages sought him out. For a century they trod the most diverse routes in vain. How to locate the secret hexagon which harbored it? Someone proposed a regressive approach. In order to locate book A, first consult book B, which will indicate the location of A. In order to locate book B, first consult book C, and so on ad infinitum. I have squandered and consumed my years in adventures of this type. To me, it does not seem unlikely that on some shelf of the universe there lies a total book. I pray to the unknown gods that some man, even if only one man, and though it have been thousands of years ago, may have examined and read it. If honor and wisdom and happiness are not for me, let them be for others. May heaven exist, though my place be in hell. Let me be outraged and annihilated, but may thy enormous library be justified, for one instant, in one being. The impious assert that absurdities are the norm in the library, and that anything reasonable, even humble and pure coherence, is an almost miraculous exception. They speak, I know, of the febrile library, whose hazardous volumes run the constant risk of being changed into others, and in which everything is affirmed, denied, and confused by as a divinity in delirium. These words, which are not only denounce disorder but exemplify it as well, manifestly demonstrate the bad taste of the speakers and their desperate ignorance. Actually, the library includes all verbal structures, all the variations allowed by the 25 orthographic symbols, but it does not permit of one absolute absurdity. It is pointless to observe that the best book in the numerous hexagons under my administration is called Combed Clap of Thunder, that another is called The Plaster Cramp, and still another XXXS Muleo. Such propositions as they are contained in these titles, at first sight incoherent, doubtless yield a cryptographic or allegorical justification. Since they are verbal, these justifications already figure, ex hypothesi, in the library. I cannot combine certain letters as Dungledurhej, which the divine library has not already foreseen in combination, and which in one of its secret languages does not encompass some terrible meaning. No one can articulate a syllable which is not full of tenderness and fear, and which is not, in one of those languages, the powerful name of some god. Speak is to fall into tautologies. This useless and wordy epistle itself already exists in one of the 30 volumes of the five shelves in one of the uncountable hexagons, and so does its refutation. An n number of possible languages makes use of the same vocabulary. In some of them, the symbol library admits the correct definition, ubiquitous and everlasting system of hexagonal galleries. But library is bread, or pyramid, or anything else, and the seven words which define it possess another value. You who read me, are you sure you understand my language? Methodical writing distracts me from the present condition of men, but the certainty that everything has been already written nullifies or makes phantoms of us all. I know of districts where the youth prostrate themselves before books and barbarously kiss the pages. They do not know how to make out a single letter. Epidemics, heretical disagreements, the pilgrimages which inevitably degenerate into banditry have decimated the population. I believed I had mentioned the suicides more frequent each year. Perhaps I am deceived by old age and fear. But I suspect that the unique human species is on the road to extinction, while the library will last on forever, illuminated, solitary, infinite, perfectly immovable, filled with precious volumes, useless, incorruptible secret. Infinite, I have just written. I have not interpolated this adjective merely from rhetorical habit. It is not illogical, I say, to think of that the world is infinite. Those who judge it to be limited postulate that in some remote places the corridors and stairs and hexagons could inconceivably cease, a manifest absurdity. Those who imagined it to be limitless forget that the possible number of books is limited. I dare insinuate the following solution to this ancient problem. The library is limitless and periodic. If an eternal voyager were to traverse it in any direction, he would find, after many centuries, that the same volumes are repeated in the same disorder, which repeated would constitute an order itself. My solitude rejoices in this elegant hope. Written by Jorge Luis Borges, Mar del Plata, 1941. Give my throat a little rest there. While I read that, I listened to Rococo Rondo by the Ghostwriters, from Gardens Where We Feel Secure by Virginia Astley, both two great privately released New Age albums from the 80s, and now we're listening to Montparnasse, which is SoundCloud released in 1981 by a Japanese artist named Yoron, who, fun fact, although this cassette was also privately released and very obscure, Yoron later became Yoji Biomechanica, one of the most famous hard trance DJs in the world. There's your fun fact for today. And may you never stop traversing the infinite library. This is Sam, and you are listening to 91.5 WMFM Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
This is Lawrence Lessig, and you are listening to WMFO in Medford. 91.5 FM and WMFO.org on the web. Tufts Freeform and Educational Radio.
I am the one who knocks.